Okay, so we're here sitting in our house at Port Solent, and I've got my mother Jill Clark with me, Chris Clark, and yes, it's the 19th of May 2014, and we're going to be talking about how you got to start working at GB Animation down in Cookham. So can I take you back first of all to the point where you were actually looking for work and why you were looking for work in London and what date that was?
This would have been February 1949, and I tramped the very wet streets of London for a whole month, not finding anything permanent to do, until one day I was walking down through Leicester Square, and one of the cartoon studios there that they used to have in the old days was showing an English cartoon film, and that intrigued me.
Do you know what the film was?
It's the Thames.
Oh, about the Thames?
I think it was the Thames.
All right.
Yes, I'm sure it was the Thames. And I decided I'd like to go and see that, but I only had enough money for either going there or having some lunch. So I decided I really ought to go and see what this film was like. So in I went. I was so impressed that I asked afterwards if I could see the manager.
Of the theatre, yeah.
Eventually they let me in rather reluctantly. And he said, yes, certainly, it's GB Animation down at Cookham in Berkshire. Well, that didn't mean a thing to me. I had no idea where it was. As I left there with the name written down, went on down to Fleet Street to London School of Printing, where they had a photography department where I'd actually done a bit of costume modelling for them in the past. Hmm. And went to see the... I don't know why, I had an instinct to ask this chap if he knew anything about this studio. They always seemed to know what was going on.
Wonder each other, yeah.
And yes, he said, we've got one of our girls down there now and she's very happy. Would you like the name of the production manager? And I said, well, yes, I would. He said, write to them, you know, in Cookham and you'll get an appointment and down.
Whose name did they give you?
I can't remember. His name was, he was an ex-army officer, very ex-army. Bob something. So I duly went down on the train to Berkshire and got on the bus from Maidenhead into Cookham and found myself outside the studios at Cookham, which was a lovely little country village. And the studios, the entrance to the studios on the left hand side was the house that belonged to the artist. Stanley Spencer.
Yes, Stanley Spencer, yes.
Now, he was still alive then, and so was his wife, who I met, and she had pernicious anaemia, poor darling, and looked so she really wasn't in this world. And I thought, oh, that's the first one person I'd seen in Cookham. And then I met Nick Spargo, who was one of the animators at Cookham, who was larger than life with a huge black beard, and I thought, I think I'm coming to an even madder world. And I left at the theatre and the look of things. Anyway, I duly went and saw Bob, and he gave me a test and decided I would be good at painting. So, when can you start? So very surprised. I said, well, what do you like, you know?
Did you have to show him any drawings or anything?
Oh, yes, I took my stuff down with me. But he waved that aside and said, well, we'll tell you whether you're any good for this job or not from what you're doing. Yeah. Gave me this cell to work on. Anyway, I duly arrived down at Cookham and moved in. All the girls were in a place called the Maltings, which is an old house just adjacent to the studios. Lovely old buildings and lovely garden.
Was that the studio itself was in Moore Hall, was it?
Yes.
Is that what it was called?
Yes, and Dan's studio was at the back. And they were all kind of sort of just like prefabricated places, really. At the back of the studios.
What was the hall like? That was your
hall.
Hall
was lovely,
there?
Very old. Must have been a very grand house at one time. I think I'm not sure it wasn't used as some sort of a clearing station during the war. It probably was used for people who were either recuperating or whatever. I think that's was the story. And afterwards it was taken over by some sort of computer firm.
All right.
Which seemed a little odd after what had been going on.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine them settling into the madhouse. We settled in and we worked in what was called the Haggery. It was because Walt Disney called his girls the Hags.
Oh, right, that's why it was.
And that was, we were all called the Haggery.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, that's what we were called then. And duly settled down to work and quite happily.
Well, so you mentioned Walt Disney. Was there a connection between Walt Disney and GB Animation then?
Yes, he sent over Ralph Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Ralph? Yes, Ralph Wright, who came over. The
Goofy one, wasn't it?
No, he did Dumbo.
All right.
No, it was Dave Hand that came over, but right. Ralph Wright came with him.
Uh-huh.
He was one of Disney's right-hand men.
Hmm.
He came for a bit to sort of see the studio open and on getting on well. And everybody was trained there. And I lost myself now.
So we were talking about the Haggery, basically, weren't
we? Yes. We settled down to work and we discovered that we had quite a social life there.
Hmm.
But of course we had to make our own life and we were all very badly paid, of course, but then we weren't expecting anything else.
Can you remember how much you were paid?
I can. It was £3 a week.
£3?
And out of that you had to pay so much for your keep.
Gosh.
Which was pretty awful, but and we seemed to live on snook. And
snook,
some sort of strange fish that I wouldn't dream of using now. Whale meat,
gosh.
And all sorts of strange things. I think that possibly was why so many of the people went down with TB there, because it was damp and we weren't very well fed. But we were used to that after the rationing anyway,
yes.
So we were just glad to be fed. We had there was no end of social life there, but it was all everybody did it themselves. They had their own sports department, they had a film because the people that did the camera did the films, but that was always great fun because we went and met in the hall and they did a film and halfway through some wag would cut the film with his scissors, and we sort of disintegrate. Sorts of ridiculous things happened. And they played a lot of very funny old films. There were great, big, wonderful socials in which we all had fancy dress, which were great fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron, who I was to meet there, went as a Roman lavatory. First time with a cistern on his head and it's a Roman toga and two others went in as mushrooms and sewed themselves into their costumes and then discovered that they couldn't go to the loo to be unstitched and they had their own band because they had their own music department.
What, doing music for the films?
They had their own sound effects. That was another thing that Ron did, sound effects for them. Very good at doing those, except that he would keep upsetting one of the directors because he would make them during lunch and gave him indigestion. His chat would keep doing these impersonations of things.
So the sound effects, were these made with by banging things, or did he make them vocally?
Vocally as well.
Yeah.
They did eventually begin to bring a few. Well, what were not professionals then? People, for instance, like Harry Secombe. Who was not well known at all then, and he came in a long white raincoat and a funny flat hat, and made himself known to Ron. He was outside his window, knocked on the window, and said, "Hello, folks. I'm Harry Secombe." You know, and he said, they'd never laughed so much in all their lives. He was just a naturally funny man.
Yeah.
But they had even my Uncle Norman went down and did a session for them, which he very crossly said afterwards he never got paid for. So that didn't surprise me either. I don't know. But I know Ronald used to do it. And they had their own music department, and I'm trying to remember, Stu Crombie was a young chap, and he became one of the chief musical people to do with the music department at the BBC.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because he was absolutely brilliant. They had their own instrumentalists, and we had our own band, we had everything. But it was all self-sufficient, which was lovely, really. Nobody could spend any money, but we made our own amusements. They had, and then because there were two camps there, one was the Druids and one were the Morans. And I became a Druid for a bit. Yeah. It was a sort of intellectual lot,
right.
Or thought they were.
Yeah.
And Dad was one of the Morans.
So who came up with that idea of the Morons and Druids?
I don't know. And they had lectures and all, because they were in the educational department, of course, which made educational films. And
that, that's right. So, yeah, so yes, that came out in what Dad was saying, that it was the main thrust of the GB animation was for educating people, kids, I suppose, through...
Yes.
Through cartoons.
Yes, they were very clever. Mm. There were some very, very clever young people down there. And it was sad that it wasn't to last too long.
Mm.
But I suppose it lasted about five to 6 years, that's all. And then J. Arthur Rank, who owned the studio then, decided that... he couldn't do the Carry On films. They were becoming popular.
Mm.
And subsidise a cartoon film studio. Right, so the Carry On films won.
Right.
And everybody, and I mean everybody, was out of work.
Yeah.
Suddenly.
And when was that?
That was at the end of... the very end of 1949.
Oh, so you were down there for less than a year then, basically?
Yes, just about 11 months.
Mm.
As I was there until February, and Dad left earlier than that.
Mm.
But he was very sensible. He worked on, as usual, he put his mind to things and worked on specimens night and day. And went up to IPC.
Mm.
And got some freelance work. And then, of course, he was eventually taken on the inside as an art editor.
So we've got Fleetway Publications,
Fleetway Publications.
Yeah.
IPC.
Yeah.
But an awful lot of them couldn't get work.
Right.
An awful lot were out of work. But I think it was because he applied himself. I realise now how hard he worked, night and day. And as he said in one of his letters... from his home, because we didn't have phones then.
Mm.
We didn't. We wrote letters every day, of which I have got every letter, which included a beautiful little cartoon at the end of each one. They're very precious.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
He said, I've been working, I'm a bit tired, love, but I'm writing this, because there's no coal, it's bloody cold. How he managed to work in a completely unheated house in January of that year, which was very cold, I don't know.
Mm.
But I think perhaps we'd been so used to a lot of privations that we took it in our stride.
Yeah. We should just sort of backtrack a moment, because you describe very clearly your first... your introduction to GB animation. Mm. So what was your actual first job that you did there? Can you remember what they got you to do?
I I can't remember the name of the film now at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was just so engrossed in getting used to the technique and perfecting it that I really wasn't bothered what the name of the film was. I can't remember.
But can you remember what you had to do? What was your?
Oh, well, we worked on a cell.
Mm.
It's a sort of, and it had special paints, and the tracers drew the outline, and we had to, and each picture had to coincide with the next one, because it was then animated.
Yeah.
So you had to keep, had to be absolutely accurate, and you very quickly fell in with it, you know, got them right, didn't go over the edges at all. It was quite exacting work, but you got so used to it that after a while you could keep turning them out extremely quickly.
It works on the base of a storyboard, I suppose, and then lots of very, very similar images.
Yes.
You get the feeling of movement and so forth. So as you say, any slight change in the background colour would be immediately next.
I must say that I do think that the way that they did them in those days, not computerised, they were flowed far better.
Mm.
They're too jerky now, mm-hmm. the computerised ones. And a lot of people say the same thing.
Right.
They're sort of artificial looking, whereas the ones that were hand done, it's flowed, because it was just each drawing went into the next.
So what were you actually colouring? Were you doing the characters? Everything.
You had a frame.
Uh-huh.
You had a light box, and you looked through, and you could see what you had to do. You had instructions.
So one person was responsible for the entire frame, wasn't you? Just sort of painting the hedge here.
They'd give you a
whole
set. They'd give you a whole folder of them, and then you could get that done as quick as possible. And if they were working to a deadline, we often had to work in the evening or weekends, which is I was perfectly used to, having worked at the theatre, because no way were they sort of 9-to-5 jobs.
Mm.
That didn't worry me at all.
So I suppose it was in the interest of getting it done smoothly, though it wouldn't have to be too complicated a drawing, I suppose, if you... Blue sky, you didn't want too many clouds in, I suppose.
Well,
or
what they call background people.
Mm,
Percy Pointer worked on those.
Uh-huh.
And did some fantastic backgrounds. And then this was superimposed on the top, and then there's the photography department, all photographers, and they took the photographs of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was a long process, a very long process, but it worked.
Yeah. Did you actually enjoy the work?
Yes, thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah. It was very different from what I'd been doing before, but it was an experience that I thoroughly enjoyed.
Mm.
And I actually went back and did again when I was 61.
I
thought I must be mad to think that, particularly as they had a lot of Hungarians in the studio in Paris who are well known for being the best painters in the business, and I sat next to one who helped me through the first couple of days, and I just thought, well, I must be absolutely mad to think I can do this again.
This was the 1980s, wasn't it? You did this? Yeah.
But very quickly.
Mm.
And there again, the young painters and tracers were so kind to me, the French girls.
Mm.
They call me Madame Nobby.
Madame Nobby. Dad was called Nobby, wasn't he, by everybody? Yeah.
It was a revelation, and it so quickly came back.
What was that company called? And they were doing Asterix films, weren't they?
Yes, Asterix the Gaul.
Can you remember what the company was there?
I remember what the company was.
Well, that's sort of a different story, isn't it, really?
Yes.
So you described sort of sitting in front of a light box doing things. What was the extent of your responsibility? You had to do, you completed a batch. Was there somebody else waiting for you to finish?
Mm.
I'm trying to get a sense of the teamwork, actually.
It's teamwork, yes. Mm. It's just the thing was to get it done as quickly and accurately as you possibly could.
So who passed you on?
We had two girls who were the, what they call the head of the haggery.
Yeah.
And they oversaw us and made sure everything moved like clockwork.
Do you remember their names?
Sheila was one of them. Mm. I can't remember what her surname was. Mm. And the other one, I can't remember the other one. Oh, Eunice was the other one. And what their surnames were, I can't remember. Oh, Eunice Bagley. That's right. she was very nice.
So what would normally... the film was being prepared, I suppose. Did you have kind of meetings at the beginning of the week to tell you what the week's work was going to be? Or
no. We just came in on Monday morning and they said, you've got a lot of work to do, and handed you the thing, get on with it. And that was it.
Right. Nothing more than that.
we were entertained by, on the radio, by Music While You Work, I think it was.
That was on the radio.
Sort of current thing that was played for factory workers, I think, at the time, to keep them happy.
So who did you pass your work on to after that?
Clean up.
Yeah. So what were they do? The sort of
just make sure it was absolutely pristine.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not on to camera, I think they called it camera, not photography, camera. And then it went on. It was the finish, you know.
Mm.
It was all within one big building and. It was a sort of, they were a mixed bag of men, mostly out of the, nearly all of them have come out of the forces.
Mm.
Nearly all of them.
Yeah. Was any sort of quality checking? Did stuff ever get sent back to you?
Quality check was done by a lady called, what's her name? She became the wife of the Marmalade King, Chivers. Chivers or is one of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was a lady who did all the paint mixing, Joyce Howard's wife.
Oh, right.
Her name was Joyce Ambrose then.
Mm-hmm.
She was on the paint mixing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite a job because they had to get the colour exactly right.
Right. Yeah.
And then the people were doing also, not only the film itself, but they were doing the characters. You had a character sheet which had to be drawn and painted so that in all different directions, front view, back view, side view, any view you can think of, so that you could get the details completely correct.
So it sounds like very exacting work then, isn't it, really? You're actually painting several characters in different profiles and they've all got to have the same... They can't suddenly be sort of darker-skinned or lighter-skinned.
No, it had to be absolutely accurate.
Hair in a different style, different jacket.
It sort of like second nature after a while.
Yeah, yeah.
You just turn it out and they had to be dried and then go on, you know.
You mentioned that... Earlier, that it was kind of special paint. You can remember what was special about
what
it.
The special paint was now. It was actually mixed in great big cans.
Was it oil based or?
It must have been, I think.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a liquid form.
Mm.
Yeah. You worked on the. Funny enough, you worked on the back, if I remember rightly now.
Mm-hmm.
So it was even more difficult because it was like the back of a picture. Back to front.
You're painting it back to front.
Mm.
I see.
Don't you?
Yeah.
And then the front came out correct.
Yes.
Within the line, but you had to be so careful. Mm. Yeah, it's quite complicated, really, but you know. it was a change for me to sort of to sit still and work instead of continually tearing from one place to another.
How long typically were the shifts? I mean, you kind of do need to get up and move around a bit.
We must have started at 9. I think we worked until 1. Okay, back at 2, and then I think we worked until I think we worked until about 5:45 or 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 or 6. And then we had a meal, and then the evening was ours.
Mm. But no breaks in between, no sort of...
Oh, yes, we did have a break. And we had a fantastic summer that year. There had been floods there in the February, similar to what we've just had. The Thames came over, and we had pictures of all the Haggerty having to go over to the Maltings in a boat. Because you couldn't, the Thames came over.
Was that in the spring? Was that
in the February.
49, February 49.
Yes, that's when I was tramping the streets. It didn't stop raining. The Thames came over.
Oh, so you weren't down there when it flooded, but...
I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah.
And that's when Dad had his little... I don't know if it's minor, what do you call it?
There's an old Austin Seven, wasn't it? Yes.
And the floorboards weren't complete, so that the water, of course, we hadn't realised, and they all decided, let's go into Wade Maidenhead to the pictures, some of the men. They got in and got out of sight of the gate, and of course the water flew in through them. And soaked them all to come back in again. But it had all cleared. It clears quite quickly, surprisingly enough, when it goes down. And we had the hottest summer that we'd had for years, and it didn't rain at all, really, until the end of October.
Mm.
It was the most fantastic summer.
To apply the paint, what did you have a sort of range of different brushes?
Yes, very fine.
Mm.
And then a thicker one for filling in big areas.
Well, so Windsor and Newton, were they, or something? Do you remember what?
I don't remember the make now.
Mm.
It could have been, there were a lot of makes then, weren't there? Reeves and.
Mm.
But there was different to any that you would use for watercolour or oil paint in the usual sense of the word. You had a lot, and you had to. Rags to clean and spirit to clean your brushes. And
you'd already been to art school, and your father was a painter,
yes,
obviously. But so
several years.
You probably came with some skills already. But
oh, yes,
what
exactly.
What sort of training was given to you when you got there, and or people who arrived? Did anybody sort of show you
gave me a test, you see, before they took me on. And decided that I was probably going to be better at painting than the tracing.
Mm.
It was more varied, you know, because it was just black and white or whatever. As you were using the colour, which was nice. We had a colour sheet, you see, for each frame.
Mm.
And you just work by that.
Right. You mentioned it was good for you to kind of sit still. I know you as a very active person. So how did you manage to kind of get into that sort of relaxed frame of mind? You said you had music going on and things.
Yes. We didn't really have much chance to chat a matter because you had to concentrate.
Yeah.
You couldn't be not thinking what you were doing, so your head was down pretty well.
So it was quite a quiet environment, and apart from the radio going, then
it
was quite quiet. And,
yes.
Yeah.
I think that was partly why it was restful. You just got on with the job in hand and...
Yeah. You said you couldn't remember the name of the first film you were doing. Can you remember the titles of any of the other things that you were doing?
Do you know, it's completely gone. It's quite a long time ago. I can't remember the name of the titles of the films that we did now.
Okay, well, we're just going to pause this now because we're just about to run out of time, so we'll switch over to the next chapter in a second then. need to do a new one in a minute. Oh, no, it's actually gone straight on.